You know, the brain is a very resilient thing, and it'll get you out of, in most cases, whatever slump or how unhappy you are or fear or stress you might have. And those bad times are going to come back, and we're just going to go through it again. And some people might say that's not a great way to live, but highs and lows, man, you got to ride them out.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 101 of the Mad Happy Podcast. This is Phineas. Today, I'm excited to introduce a conversation that Payman had with Matthew Haig, otherwise known as Nadeshot. This is a conversation long in the works. Nadeshot is one of the most recognizable professional gamers. The two speak to their shared experience starting and building a business. Nadeshot speaks to his childhood and mental health journey, as well as how he got into the gaming community in the first place and how to manage stress and mental health within that industry. It's a fascinating conversation. We haven't had an episode quite like this thus far, so I hope you enjoy it. Without further ado, the Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism. Enjoy the episode with Payman and Nadeshot.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Mad Happy Podcast, joined today by my friend Matt, also known as Nadeshot. Welcome to the show.
Appreciate it, brother. I'm excited to chop it up a little bit. We've been trying to get this on the books. I felt terrible. It made me feel like I was the president. It was a turbulent couple months, and I couldn't put my headspace around a podcast, but I'm excited we got it done.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. I know that Grace and the rest of the team has been working on it for a while, so we're excited to have you, and no time like the present. So
yes, sir.
So something we start every episode with is we have this journal. It's like a daily mental health journal, a different question every day. And I'm going to ask you the question. And my question today is like, what's one thing right now that you're struggling with that you're trying to work on in professional, personal life? It could be anything.
I would say the one thing that I struggle with is balance. Just because you know how it is when you start a business, it's like every day something pops up that pulls away your attention from what you were focused on before. And I'm the type of person that gets siloed off into whatever I'm excited about. So it's always trying to find that balance between what I need to do, but what I also want to do. And sometimes it's a combination of both. That might sound a little complicated, but that's where I struggle the most, is really balancing what the business needs, but what I think is best for the business might be something completely different. And so when something needs my attention, given that full focus when I'm not really as excited about it as I should be, that's where I'm struggling the most right now, but we're working through it.
And what about, I guess, like when you think about the personal side? I mean, I found for myself, like, personal, professional is very blended together. You know, it's all the same thing. When you're working so much and when you're just like giving a lot of energy to making your company as successful as possible, like, how do you know that, you know, you, Matt, as a person is feeling good regardless of like what's going on in the business?
I would say my fiance is probably that only source. And, you know, the rest of my friends are like my North Star that I'm always walking towards when I'm stressed out. Because, you know, it's like, you know, when you have a conversation with somebody, you can tell if they're actually listening. Like my fiance is, every word she's waiting on pins and needles, like to hear what's next. So that helps me probably the most out of everything, because work and personal life have been blended for me since I was like 16 when my career started. You know, a large portion of our business is so outwardly facing to our entire community. So I think it's tough when we get a lot of criticism because of the way our teams might be performing, or the creative around apparel drop that I was really excited about, or really anything that we really love that we worked so hard on. You know, I'm all in, and this entire company is sort of, it's just been my last 6 years and pretty much a culmination of my entire career. So there really is no separation. So I think that's why having home base with Haley at home is probably what keeps me afloat, and having Joe to talk to too. You know, he started working here a year and a half ago, but him and I are pretty much cut from the same cloth, has the same sense of humor, same sorts of outlook on life. So, I, it's good to have him in the office just to have somebody to chop it up with when, you know, shit's in the fan.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess to rewind a little bit, where did you grow up and what was that dynamic like? Siblings, anything that you want to share from growing up?
Oh, man. I grew up in Chicago, Illinois. You know, some people are sticklers about saying I'm from the city. I'm like 20 minutes outside, south side, Palos Hills, for anybody that's from 708 that's familiar with it. I had two great parents, an older brother and an older sister. We're all three, 2 years apart. Sister was the oldest, but I had a great childhood. My dad was a carpenter, built the house we grew up in, just retired like a year and a half ago, 36 years in the union. My mom was an emergency room secretary at the hospital. She worked graveyard. My dad worked days, and they made it work, man. They busted their ass to give their kids like an opportunity to not have to worry about the things they had to stress about. And I think that's everybody's parents' goal, but you know, they were blue collars, blue collar cum, and they made it work and they made it happen. So everything, it was a great base for me.
Yeah.
You know, we hit it like choppy waters. My mom passed away when I was 18. So that was tough for everybody to deal with. But, you know, and that's why I love my fiance so much. And you'll hear me talk about her a lot because she brought me closer to my family. You know, I moved to LA and sort of, I don't know, put everything else that I had back at home on pause. I don't know if that was like a coping mechanism with everything that happened or if I was just too caught up in my own success because I finally got a chance at it. I'm like, I'm gonna make everything work. But as soon as I started dating Haley, you know, she got me on the phone with my grandparents, which I regretted for a long time because I spent a lot of time with them because my parents' work schedule. They were my godparents who lived 5 minutes away. You know, she talks to my dad, my brother, and sister more than I talk to them. So it's a beautiful thing. So overall, life was good up to a certain point, and you know, you go through your challenges, but it got better, and now it's in the best place it's ever been, having that connection back with all of them at home.
Yeah, that's amazing. Shout out, Haley.
Oh, yeah. She's the GOAT.
But
that's why she's the GOAT.
So you grew up as the youngest child, right?
Yes, sir.
I guess, like, any dynamics you remember there of, like, feeling positive toward that, negative towards that, or neither?
You know what? I actually think I liked being the youngest. I couldn't explain it then, but I think I just really liked the attention that my mom and dad gave me. You know, I feel like the middle child, which my older brother, him and I were the closest. Me and my sister were, you know, couldn't be more different. And so I think I enjoyed being the youngest, but, you know, when everybody left home, my parents or my siblings moved out for college and my dad was working all the time. That was a hard time for me to sort of navigate without really having enough perspective about who I was and what I needed in my life. But that's why I ended up at video games, man. You know, it was just like a home away from home. Got kids on the internet who are my best friends to this day. And we didn't know what we were doing at the time, but I think all things kind of led me to one place. And so, yeah, I'm grateful for being the youngest just because I feel like I got to learn a lot from everything that was happening around me. I had people to guide me, but yeah, I've never really thought about it too much until now.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Yeah. That's what we try to do.
You got any siblings?
Yeah, so I have a younger brother, 2 years younger, who I started this company with actually, and so it's just us.
I didn't
two.
Realize you guys were brothers. Yeah. I don't know why that never clicked.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Maybe
for that.
I'll meet him later. It's all good.
That would be great. So I'm sure you've talked about it on the podcast before, so I don't want to take it up if you've chatted about it quite often, but how's that dynamic been? I'm curious.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're also pretty different, even though obviously like we're brothers and only 2 years apart. Like he's a lot more on the creative side, I'm a lot more on the business side, so I think naturally there's always like a little tension there. But I think now that we've been working together on this for almost 6 years, it's like we've learned a lot, both grown up a lot with this being both of our first businesses. So of course challenges like any founder type relationships, there's always like ups and downs, and we have another partner as well, so all of us together just trying to like balance out that relationship, make sure we're spending that time together individually, all that. And then for me and my brother, still keeping that like brother relationship,
yeah,
which sometimes like took a backseat in the past when like we're more focused on the business, you know, and obviously that's not a great outcome.
What do you, I mean, I don't mean to pry, we can just veto this question, but I actually always love asking this question just because my business partner and I are so different, obviously not siblings, but we actually become incredibly close. It's gonna be a groomsman at my wedding. You know, we have a great relationship now, but what's the biggest like disconnect that you and your brother ever had, or even with your other partner, like the biggest argument over, and it doesn't necessarily need to be an argument. I don't know if you guys are combative when you're passionate about something, but was there any point that you can remember where there was like a really big strain on the relationship just because, I don't know, you wanted to do something different than everybody else wanted to do?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think to say that there's never strain, like anyone who says that would be lying, you know.
Yeah.
And if you do anything that's like worth doing, it's like everyone's is very passionate about it, and like that's one of the amazing things, but it also becomes like the challenge and like how to make sure people's voices are heard. I think a couple of things that come to mind. I mean, there's hundreds of examples, so I don't want to downplay it. Like, there's only a few, but I think early days, I mean, first couple of years, like especially even before we raised money and all that sort of stuff, we had just key decisions to make around product positioning, like where we're going to sort of land there. And I think the brand has been so focused on mental health and optimism and all of those pieces. But I think to my brother and to all of us now, but at the time we didn't see it as much, was like, oh, I think, you know, we can have a more elevated positioning. Like, our price point can be a little higher because of the quality of the stuff that we're doing. And we pushed more in that direction, which of course now feels like, oh, that was so obvious. Like, of course we should do that. I think at the time it's hard because like you're trying to have like a very inclusive message, but there's also like some pieces of the brand that are exclusive just naturally, right?
Yeah.
Like a collaboration sells out. Like, you can't do anything about that, and you want some of those elements. But tying those two things together, like, there's a lot of like, oh, like, should we do that? Like, does that feel right? Does that, like, I don't want to do that. Like, you know, and like that sort of thing. Now that as the decisions get bigger, it's like more, sometimes more pressure, because it's like, oh, you know, we're launching in our first overseas market later this year. And it's like the ways that we got to deciding what country we were going to do, there's a lot of like battling and arguing of like this one before this one and all of that. And obviously everyone's passionate. We're all trying to get to the same place, but there's definitely a healthy amount of that. And I feel like the brother connection makes it like slightly more elevated as well.
It always feels like there's just a little bit more on the line when you're talking to the family, especially with some around business, I'm sure.
For sure. And I mean, I think it's something that we've both worked on personally, of just like, you know, there's a different way that you would talk to a sibling maybe than a coworker. And so I think we've had to learn and grow there as well.
Man, those price points, dude, they're fickle, huh? Yeah, I totally get it, especially too with like Mad Happy and what it represents, man. I actually love the messaging, and I don't know, I want to say you guys were the first. I'm definitely not, I don't come from the world of fashion, but it just feels so different from anything that I've personally seen. And so I would imagine, you know, as you're trying to build a business, one that you're proud of, doing both of those things and having that elevated feel while also being inclusive, that's a tough balance, man. Yeah. That's a dance.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
I'm sure in those moments, I probably wouldn't envy your position, because, I mean, we do price points and have debated that heavily, but we don't have such an important message, I would say, around, you know, it's mental health and how you should carry yourself.
Yeah, and I think there's just different ways to do it. It doesn't mean any other way would have been wrong or the brand would have failed, but I think once you pick a lane, you really have to like stand up for yourself in that lane, you know, and you can't like back down from it or switch course. So I think it does feel higher stakes, especially at the beginning when it's your first company and you think everything's a big deal, and then you realize like everything goes wrong, but then you're fine anyways.
Well, man, I think you're doing a pretty good job. Yeah. So those arguments were well worth it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Awesome. Well, I appreciate those questions. I don't think we've talked about all those on the pod, so that's good.
Well, brother, we gotta have a song dance too. We gotta go back and forth, man. I don't want to just sit here talk about me, man. I'm fascinated by the Mad Happy story. So
I have a good one. So, you know, you talked about your parents, both of them working like super hard, and like, I guess I'm curious. One, how did that make you think like what you wanted to do? Right, like you said, you grew up and you guys were fine, but obviously, like, did that inspire you? Oh, I want to be successful and like make money and like support myself, my family, or was that more just like, oh, like, why do they have to work so much? Like, they're not with us as much. Like, how were you thinking about that as a kid? And then like, as you grew up and started in gaming and all that stuff, how did that change?
Yeah, man. I think for me, the biggest driver that really powered like my engine was, one, you know, my dad working with his hand. I mean, the guy's up at 4:30, if not 4 a.m. every single day since I can, like, literally since I was a baby. I mean, he had all three kids. He was at work the next day. So there was just no way to turn that off in his world. And I just have so much respect for that, because I feel like, I don't know if it's a generational thing, but everybody wishes something would come easier to them. And I certainly was like a lazy kid, but it wasn't until I was like 15 years old playing too many video games that my mom essentially forced me to go get a job. So I had to go to the dean's office, and my neighbor from down the street who I used to play Gears of War with was working at McDonald's. He's like, if you apply, I'll get you a job. I was upset at that time just because I'm like 15. I don't want, you know, I'm trying to play Call of Duty. So at that time, I didn't realize it would turn into a career. It was just what I wanted to spend my time doing. But my mom forced me to do it. And I've actually never been more thankful. I was talking about this yesterday. I went golfing with one of our investors, and he was asking about growing up. And I'm like, well, listen, I actually think that job at a fast food restaurant changed my life, because I was a pretty socially awkward kid. I just didn't know how to approach people, have a conversation. I was very self-conscious because I was really short, really underweight. So I had a lot of things. Very self-conscious kid. And, you know, when you have a job in service and you got to deal with people in the drive-through and customers of various different temperaments, you really learn how to talk. And I think that helped me find my voice. But my parents, just seeing my dad, what he went through, I don't think I could have appreciate it at the level which I'm at now, just because, you know, when you're in high school, I don't even know if you're capable of having that perspective. You might have those feelings, but I don't think you can actually recognize, you know, the strength that it would take to actually raise kids and support that type of life that we had. So on top of that, 100 Thieves actually stems from my grandpa grew up in Bridgeport, Chicago, and his mom, you know, it never makes sense to me because it sounds wealthier than it actually is, but she owned a pub. And he'd work there since he was, like, in diapers. And he would hustle pool. He would go out to Comiskey Park. He would, like, buy ball, like, baseballs from the, like, corner store and then go out and sell them outside of Comiskey, acting like he was catching home runs out here. So he would, I mean, my grandpa, if you think I can talk, he could sit here and have a conversation with anybody. We used to go to the grocery store. He was an insurance salesman. And he would stop to talk to every single person in that grocery store trying to sell him insurance. So it was just those stories, I think, and I actually attribute a lot to, I don't like using the word, like, the hustler mentality, because I think it's a little too on the nose, but I think those things just seep their way into my subconscious, and I wanted to make money, and I wanted to be heard, and I wanted to talk to people, and I wanted to, shoot my shot with anybody that would listen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, similar for me, and I won't answer every question that I ask you myself.
Oh, but, come on, man, we're on the hot seat.
This one, my parents are both Persian, so from Iran. They left Iran during the revolution, moved to Italy, met there. We were actually born there, me and my brother, and then we moved here when I was 6 and he was 4. So,
wait, can I cut you off real quick?
Yeah.
The revolution, what year was that?
In like the late 70s.
Was that the same time with the script for Argo based off of?
Yeah.
Well, parts of it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry to ask. I just really love that
movie. Exactly. Yeah. Great movie.
And I'm not a historian, it's like, I don't mean that for me to my your reference point for your culture, but
no,
sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's like what most people know, or maybe you're seeing some of the stuff now with like the protests and everything. But, you know, I think one, like, we don't have the concept of like having to like flee a country. Like, that's insane, you know,
can't and
like
imagine
the impact that has on someone, especially when you're like 18 or 19, which they were at the time. Then they moved to a new country, like set up a whole life, you know, speak Italian, were born there, all of that. But then they're like, oh, like, the best opportunity for me and my brother is probably if we move to LA. We're in the US and education, all that stuff. So moving when you're basically like 40 years old to a new country that you don't speak English, you have to learn English while your kids are learning English. You have to fully like find a new thing to do for work because you do something fully different in Italy. It's crazy, you know? And I think like growing up, I always felt like, oh, damn, like, you know, I'm so different than everyone else. Like, everyone else is already set up. Like, we just moved here. We're trying to figure it out, all the stuff. And, like, now thinking back, it's like, damn, like, all those sacrifices. Same thing with my dad. Like, wakes up super early. He's been working basically since he was 18. And now he's, like, 65, 66. So it's, like, many, many years. Same thing with my mom. Always, like, both of them working. I think for a lot of people that can turn into, like, negative things of, like, oh, like, I need to get rich because, like, you know, like, fuck everyone else. And, you know, I think for me and my brother, it was just more like, damn, like, they worked that hard. So, like, now we need to continue to level that up. And, like, that's why we had the opportunity to start this company, you know?
Brother, it's so weird to hear that story just because the other day I was thinking about the fact of I was never around, I don't know, any first generation or second generation kids or parents or anything like that. And I guess I had never really thought about it because you would hear, oh, my parents moved over here when they were teenagers and they figured it out. It almost seemed like an old wives' tale from where I grew up. And I don't mean for that to sound any other way. I just never really thought about how for daunting sure. of a task. If you drop me off in a country right now, and I had a U.S. passport, and I had to restart my life, there is no way I feel like I would be capable. And then having kids, building a career, I can't even, I truly can't even fathom it. Yeah. So,
and I can't either. I mean, I think it's like, and, you know, in those times, it's also, it's not like you can carry your, you know, today you move to Japan, tomorrow you can, you have social media, you could still like figure out a lot of things for yourself. I think like at that time, especially, it's like, you're leaving all your family, you're moving to a new country, and it's just like, let's see what happens, you know, and you're just going to try. And for me, like, I always thought, like, damn, like, it sucks. Like, I have to, like, you know, like, my parents don't really speak English well, like, all this stuff, like, when I was growing up. But like,
that's a lot to deal with,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, thinking back, though, it's like, I had it so much easier than them. You know, in 6 months, I learned English. Like, you know, I was 6 years old, and for them, it was a lot harder. For them, they didn't have any friends. They had to make friends. I was just in school, and it's so easy to make friends in school, so... yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Are your parents still around?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, they must be proud of you and your brother then, so, bro. They must be over the moon.
For sure, you know, and I think, like, that's why it's, like, you know, that is why, and I think, like, that's, like, the kind of, like, healthier way that I think me and my brother both, like, channeled into, like, this and what we're building here and working super hard, you know, because it's, like, obviously if they did that for us, then, like, we have to just, you know, let that, you know, anything that we accomplish is, like, really their accomplishing because, like, they moved here and they gave us the opportunity.
I bet they're wearing mad happy every day. Damn. I don't know if they're anything like my dad. My dad wears like it's our first generation, like our first apparel drop. He wears it religiously. Yeah. I mean, we send him everything now. He's like, I don't really like the hoodies. Give me the t-shirts though. I bet they wear it every day.
Yeah, no, they definitely wear it a lot. I mean, they live super close to both of us, like 10 minutes away. So
oh, you amazing. Got them out here to LA too?
No, we all lived in LA.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know why, but when I heard earlier off the podcast, you were talking to Joe, you went to University of Michigan. I don't know why in my head I thought you grew up in Michigan.
No,
that
makes
sense.
So we grew up here. I just went to school at Michigan, came back.
You missed the Midwest at all?
It was a good 4 years, I would say. I think a good stint is always good for everyone, I think. I think very eye-opening. You can drive to a bunch of other states. Like, I would have never gone to a lot of the states I visited at that time. So I think gave me, like, a wider sense instead of, like, going to school in, like, you know, a New York or a Florida where, like, you're going to visit those places a lot. So for me, it was amazing. But, yeah, I mean, I think going back to it, I think it was, like, from an early age, I was, like, you know, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. I never had this mentality that, like, I have to start a company. Like, you know, like, I don't think most people thought that back in the day, but it was that, like, I want to just, like, work hard at whatever it is I do. And so, like, during high school, that was, like, basketball and everything. I was, me and my brother were, like, very serious about basketball back in the day. And then it became like, okay, what are we going to do career wise? And then that's eventually what led to Mad Happy.
You still play at all? You know, rec league or anything like that?
I still play.
Point guard?
Not in a league now, but we still play a lot, like, recreational.
Yeah. We joined a rec league, me and a bunch of my Call of Duty buddies, because they all ended up in, like, West L.A. Before COVID, they started enforcing everybody wear a mask. You know, at the time, that wasn't, like, a crazy thing to do, but COVID had kind of settled up at that point. We're like, wait, we can't run for shit. And I'm sorry if I shouldn't swear on this podcast, but we just refused because we were hacking up lungs after 2 minutes of running.
Yeah.
Brother, but it was a blast because I played in, like, grade school. I wasn't damn good.
Where was it?
It was in West LA. I don't know how to describe it. It's, like, basically in between Santa Monica and Culver City. I forget that stretch. It's off Pico.
Yeah.
But they had, like, four leagues, A, B, C, D.
Yeah, yeah.
Bro, we were in the D league because, you know, we're gamers. Yeah, I mean, we played a little bit when we were kids, but whatever. I swear to God, Steph Curry pulled up. Bro, it was this, like, 17-year-old Asian kid. We're like, does this guy play high school? How did he get in here? Brother, I shit you not, went 13 for 17 from three in a game versus us.
That's crazy. It's
a true story, brother. Yeah. And that's when I knew rec basketball wasn't for me.
Yeah.
I quit that day.
You started playing video games when you were young, but, like, when was, like, the, I guess that first time you were like, oh, this is, like, there's a potential for a career here? And then, like, what did that feel like to you as opposed to, like, that first McDonald's job you had? Because you're like, oh, I'm making minimum wage.
Yeah.
Like, you probably didn't love the job even though it taught you a lot. Like,
didn't love it at the time. Yeah. Hell no.
No. How did that, like, change in, like, your mind of, like, oh, shit, like, there's something here?
Well, it was actually, like, I actually remember the conversation very vividly because, you know, I mean, I'm definitely not living in a movie, but it felt like where I'm sitting, it was, like, the moment where it was, like, full steam ahead, we got to go. I was having a conversation with somebody, a part of a team called Optic, and I played for Optic. That's really where my career started. And the Call of Duty world, they're like the Yankees. They're the biggest team, the most well-known team. You know, you go to like 5 kids out of 10 in high school, they'll probably know what Optic is in some way or another. So a really big deal. And at that time, though, it wasn't. They were like a sniping team on YouTube. For anyone that doesn't play Call of Duty, you have different types of guns, and snipers were like the most skillful, and it looked the flashiest. And this is when FaZe was starting up, and I played competitively. So I never really dove into the world of YouTube. I would upload like clutches of me like 1v3 in Search and Destroy to like a YouTube channel. But at that time, I didn't realize that people were making money from these YouTube channels.
Yeah.
And this was 2000 and, I don't know, late 2008, maybe even in the tail end of 2007. But it was early on YouTube. And so for them, when they were asking if we wanted to come on and represent Optic as the competitive team, because they were just sniping up to that point, when we got into the conversation about YouTube, I don't know, it was just like a light went off in my head, and I knew that I had to be doing it in some form or another. I'm like, wait, hold on, I can... Besides the tournaments that I'm playing in, which were playing for like $50 a pop at that time, there's a way for me to like upload me playing this video game and make money from it if I get enough people to watch. So that was really when I think my entire perspective changed. I did everything I could. I saved up like a year's worth of paychecks to buy a laptop. 6 months later, when I got a little bit more money in the bank, I sold that laptop so I can get an actual computer so I can install a capture card. And I was just doing anything I could. I remember buying my first gaming monitor, just saving up. So I think that was kind of like a defining point in my career where I was just, okay, there's something here. I don't know if I'll be able to pull it off, but I got to give it a try.
Yeah. And what about your parents? Like, what did they think about that?
My mom hated it. She, of course, like I said, was trying to get me out of the house because, you know, I understand her perspective. At that time, there was no viable route you could take to make a career out of video games. And even when I was playing, it wasn't until a couple years later where a career could blossom from this. So she was just worried, I think, as a parent, like, hey, you're locked in your bedroom all day. I didn't go on any school dances. I didn't go to prom, nothing like that. I didn't leave really the house too often. So I think she was probably just looking out, wanted her son to have a normal, like, sociable life. So she never came around to it, unfortunately, before she passed, but you know, I know she would be proud and that's fine and whatever. But my dad was always like my biggest fan. He didn't know what the hell I was doing, but every single day, and I hated it at the time. I fucking hated it. Yeah. Every single day. My dad was a great carpenter, but those stairs had creaks and cracks, and he would walk up the stairs at 3:30 when he got home from work. He would open my door and ask me how my day was. And I have chills right now because I hated it so much. I would hear those steps and I'd be like, oh God, I got to have like small talk. Saying, Dad, I went to school, I'm playing, I'm in the middle of something. But my dad was my biggest supporter. Now to this day, he's like my biggest fan. So yeah, it's like a very special thing to me.
Yeah. So that's high school time?
Yeah.
And so you keep doing that. And then how did your mom pass?
My mom passed. She dealt with a long history of health issues. She got carpal tunnel, had to have surgery. The surgery didn't go well. And then she had epilepsy as well. She had a seizure while driving, broke vertebrae in her back. And, you know, was just having seizures at night that would cause even bigger problems. And, you know, I think just from all the surgery and the pain, she got addicted to painkillers. And we didn't know at the time. You know, I was... Every single day, my brother and sister, we just talked about this on the podcast. It was like the first time I told the story, but my dad was out on a work trip in Iowa. My brother and sister were out to college, and you know, she was just going through a lot, and I didn't understand it, and I don't think she understood it either, because there's just not as much information nowadays about, you know, fentanyl and like the habits you can form through these medications. So that was a tough thing to go through just because it was over the span of a lot of years, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. It's hard to remember since I was young. But, you know, when you get older, you start to realize the impact that it actually had on the entire family. It's one of those things where I think it separated us a little bit, but then it has brought us closer together just because we all went through such a tough time collectively. So that's kind of like the spark notes on my mom and what everything that happened.
Yeah, and thank you for sharing.
Yeah, of course.
I guess for you, that seems like, of course, like a very major, like negative event to happen in someone's life. Was it something that you expected around that time, or was it very unexpected for the family? And then just what were the next couple months like? And
man, it's tough because I think everybody was just in so much pain through the years of her struggling with this. And again, I think my dad knew while it was happening, but he really hit it well. And I consider myself to be a pretty perceptive person. And, you know, my mom would just be a different person every single day when I'd wake up, and I just figured, oh, she's going through one of her spells, whatever, you know. And so for me, I think it was just it was completely unexpected, but I think we were all kind of, it's a really shitty thing to say, but we were all, I don't know, like a sense, months after of the initial impact, it's a weird, it was just almost like a calming came over. I was heartbroken, but we just had so much anxiety from the years and like almost like PTSD. And my dad and my sister both went, I think, on antidepressants for a little bit, and I never did it myself, and I don't fault them for doing it, but we just all went through a lot. It was some pretty heavy shit when I look back on it. So it was really tough, man. And my dad, they were together since high school. They loved each other so much, and you don't realize how you're going to feel when you see your dad cry for the first time. Is somebody as hard as, I mean, this man tough as nails. Yeah, it was a whirlwind of emotions. And, you know, Haley actually helped me, I think, kind of package up a lot of that baggage that I had left in my mental, you know, because she lost her dad as well, kind of around the same age. So our first date, we talked about it, and it was, you know, common ground, common interest. And if you don't lose a parent, you don't really, I'm not saying you're excluded, but you just don't know yet. You don't know. And so we just bonded so quickly over that and continued to talk through it. She was a glorified therapist for me. So it's been incredible for us to be there for each other and really close those loops on some really trying times in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a trying time. And again, appreciate you sharing. Is that, how soon after that did you move to LA?
I moved probably like 4 years later. I moved out in my first apartment when I got the call about my mom. I remember that day. And that was like, I think a year after I moved. I just felt terrible for my dad. You know, it just, again, high school sweethearts, man. Nobody should have to go through that. So.
And then do you think like the move to LA was like moving away from that, or it was just like, this is where my opportunity is. I'm this gaming thing's working out.
Yeah. You know what? I was going through some things in my life with, you know, my guys at Optic, you know, still best friends to this day, but you know, there's an opportunity for me to make more money, and I felt like things weren't moving quick enough. And I kind of just, I didn't realize like the impact of that decision. But I came out here to date a girl, you know, kind of just packed everything up and left like all my boys at home. And those were some great years. And I'm glad that I moved to LA because I had a lot of close friends from the gaming community still here. But it was kind of a spur of the moment thing. I never really planned on living in LA, but I think I was like running away from anything. It was more so just like, it was just the next chapter that I stumbled upon in my life.
Going from that and kind of running your like solo business, how did that lead to starting 100 Thieves in that, you know, were you thinking, I do want to start a business with like a lot of employees, or like, here's this idea I have? Like, how did that lead there?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. 100 Thieves actually was just, it was never supposed to be esports again, because I was competing in Call of Duty. I did that for like 9 years, and I was really happy to close that chapter and just focus on YouTube and just content creation more broadly. But my biggest gripe within the gaming community, obviously everybody at this time, this is back in like 2015, 2016, everybody started selling merchandise for their individual brands or channels that they had made. And then teams in gaming, they obviously, merchandise was a small component of their business, but there was just nobody, or at any point in time in my life, where I wanted to like go to school wearing anything from my favorite YouTuber. I'm sure that's completely different now for these younger kids, but at that time it didn't exist. So I just wanted to create a brand that wasn't my online, you know, moniker of Nadeshot. I made Nadeshot when I was like 16 years old. It didn't represent anything bigger than just myself. And I wanted to make something that, even if you don't come from gaming, if you saw somebody walking down the street wearing it, you wouldn't even think twice. You just think it looks dope. So that was like the genesis of 100 Thieves. So I just sold apparel drops. We did like 4 or 5 over the course of like a year and a half with like a white labeling service. And then what happened from there was one of my fans at that time when he was younger, who ended up being a very successful venture capitalist. Yeah, Blake. brother, this guy literally DM'd me over and over for like 2 years trying to have a conversation with me. And here I am looking at this kid's Twitter profile. He looks like 10 years younger than me. And he said he worked at Nest, Twitter, and Google, or SpaceX, I'm sorry, not Google. In his bio, I'm like, this, he wasn't verified. I'm like, this guy's full of shit. So yeah. I just, you know, I followed him because sometimes I'd see his tweets after so much persistence. I'm like, this guy actually sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Yeah. Seems like a smart guy, but I wasn't answering his DMs. And the last one that got me was he invited me out to the NBA Finals to pitch the company. He was going to build an entire deck for me and like, hey, I know you know the sports of or the business of esports, but I really think that you should transition it into these permanent leagues with League of Legends and Valorant and CSGO, much like you were doing with Optic. So I thank God every day that I met Blake because he really did change my life. I never planned on starting like a company, was nowhere near capable of doing it myself. It just, you know, one of those situations, right place, right time with like a really great person to guide the ship, and he sort of helped me acclimate. And then obviously meet John, and he's been sort of, he's a business partner, but also like a business mentor. In a lot of ways. So it really just happened by sheer luck. There was never like a lot of conviction around scaling a business and hiring. And, you know, we got over like 100 employees now. I still to this day can't believe it because I had the vision. I just didn't have any desire nor capability to execute.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Blake. I love
Shout out Blake Robbins, dude.
Great guy and great to know him over the years as well.
How did you meet Blake?
DM also.
No, that guy... Yeah. Just spin a web through Twitter DMs, man. It's impressive.
Yeah, it is very impressive. And now where he is, and he's only just getting started.
And it's so fucked up. If you're at home and you hear somebody's just like building business through Twitter DMs, you wouldn't realize like he's like the most genuine, like unselfish person that you'll ever meet.
Totally.
He's just a great guy to have in your camp.
It's funny because you said you didn't mean to start this whole big company. I guess now when you think back, it's like, you also probably didn't realize the level of like responsibility you were taking on and the number of years of commitment that something this big takes. Obviously it's like, you know, minimum 10 years is like what you're on the hook for. Once you do have the big investors, once you do have a lot of people working for you, obviously there is an immense pressure of like people relying on you. And of course, like the rest of the team to execute, grow, whatever. Like, how do you think back to that now in terms of like, one, the decision you made, and I'm so super grateful for making this decision to start the company. But like, you know, I'm like, damn, like I didn't think about any of this stuff beforehand. And then now I'm like, you know, of course there are things I would have done differently. And if I ever do something in the future, I would definitely change a lot. But how do you think about that now?
Well, hold on. I want to go back. What would you do differently? What are top of mind?
Well, I mean, I think like, you know, there's a lot of like interesting pieces to how our brand started. But I think we were also like a side project for like the first few years. And it wasn't supposed to be this like, oh, we're going to raise money. Like LVMH is going to invest. Then we're going to like, you know, go really big. Then we're going to become the brand of mental health. Just like you probably didn't think, oh, this thing I'm doing is now has the biggest backers in the world. And we're going to have 100 people working here, teams all over the world. And so I think one is like timing. You can't time everything. So I would have still done it, but I would have probably set it up a little bit differently and made sure that like I, one, felt like pieces of the initial team were set up foundationally better. You know, I think like we went through a lot of years because it was our first business of like, damn, like we could have moved a lot faster and just smoother and less like bumps in the road had we like taken our time to like actually form it in the right way.
Hindsight's a bitch.
Yeah, no, and I think it's all positive for the future, but I think also just like at the time I thought like, oh, like I'll do it for like 5 years, like that's a long time, but like now I'm like 10 years is barely any time, you know.
Brother,
for something to actually
blink of an eye.
I mean
I share the same sentiments. For me, I was doing pretty well for myself just from individual, earnings. You know, I mean, money is definitely a driver for me, but I was pretty comfortable. I mean, you know, if you're a YouTuber, you kind of just stumbled upon it, and I basically did whatever I want whenever I wanted to do it. And I was really enjoying the content I was making. But, you know, as I'm sure you understand from a creative standpoint, there's no way of knowing or foreseeing when you're going to go through like a slump or a rut or you're going to fall out of love. You might not necessarily be falling out of love with something, but it's almost like your brain just can't get past the original interest that you had in it. And I don't know. I feel like when you're not feeling creative, the longer you spend away from something or the longer you don't do that, it just gets jumbled up and it's just so hard to get back to where your mind used to be. And that was a really hard part about being a creative, especially on YouTube, where everything is just short term. I mean, you would spend like, I would spend an entire day filming a video, spend 2 a.m. editing it, wake up, title, thumbnail it, upload it, then I got to film another one. I did that every single day for years.
Yeah.
And then gaming videos on my second channel. I'm not trying to sound like it was the hardest job in the world, but from a creative perspective, it was just a lot of pressure. I'm like, this is how I'm going to eat. But I was doing pretty well. But when Blake brought up 100 Thieves, and you know, at that time, I spent such a long time in the gaming community, esports teams, and the opportunity with all the outside capital that was being raised for these organizations, one of which that I like helped build from the ground up, I was really grateful for that time, but I wanted to get a slice of the pie, you know what I mean? And so with Blake sort of championing the execution from, you know, finding the right operators to pair up with me, and then I could just lead creative, that's what I always thought it was going to be, and there would be some, at least, actually a lot of freedom. I was going to do what I do best. I'm going to make videos. I'm going to drive as much attention. I'm going to be the marketing engine for 100 Thieves until we get it off the ground and it can live independently by itself. But as soon as we hired John, I literally was in the office 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. And I was like, oh, fuck. You know, like, this, bro, I was staying up till 3 a.m. every single day. Whenever I wanted to do it, I could do it. And then I quickly like got a dose of what I used to do in the real world, but it was rewarding. You know, it was, some days were harder than others, but most days I was pretty excited about what we were working on. So it wasn't ever like a tough responsibility to bear. You know, I brought it upon myself through my own actions, decisions. Did I know what the expectation was going to be with somebody who's never started a company? Fuck no, I had no idea, but I'm glad I made that decision. The only time it's been really tough for me is when, you know, I feel like as soon as I stepped away from being a creator full-time, like the creator economy, quote unquote, buzzwords just catapulted itself into a new hemisphere.
Yeah.
Man, I was doing brand deals and we're pretty fucking good at the time, but now, you know, if you're a top spot in gaming, you're making money hand over fist. So those were the only times where I'm like, okay, I know I can't have my cake and eat it too. I'm focused on 100 Thieves. Short term, yeah, it was tough, but long term, I'm like, now that I'm on the other end and feel a little bit more mature and more comfortable with my life and my lifestyle, I couldn't be happier with the decision I made.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't think that was the original question, but I found myself there.
That's great. You know, one thing that we always ask on the show is like, all of us put ourselves through like a certain amount of like suffering, like that isn't needed. And then you look back a year later and you're like, why was I so worried about this thing, whether it was work or personal? I guess if you were giving advice to just to yourself, like literally 5 years ago, 6 years ago, right before you were starting the company, like, what would you say? Because you don't necessarily want to change how anything played out, but you can change, you know, how you, Matt, as a person, reacted to a lot of those situations.
Man, that is a good question. I would say, you know, I don't mean to sound too on the nose or corny with the advice, because I don't want it to sound like it's lip service, but highs and lows, man, ebbs and flows. Like, what you feel today is temporary. And if there was happiness in any sense of the phrase or emotion that you felt when you started doing what you're doing today, you know, there's definitely nuance to that where you might find the end of the road, and that could be it. But more times than not, when you're, you know, suffering through hard times or a transitional period in the company or even outside of building a company, just life in general, what I sometimes have a hard time doing, because I'll go down such a rabbit hole and just think so deeply about the things that are bothering me and are making my life harder, I just cannot see the light at the end of the tunnel. But now, you know, my brain is like on a cycle. It's just a routine of highs and lows. And so when I'm having a bad day, I just, even a bad stretch of weeks, man, those are the ones that get you, where that everyday emotion from a small problem doesn't go away. And then you have a big problem and it just feels like it's never going to end.
Yeah.
But you put one foot in front of the other, wake up, and you might be fucking miserable, and it's okay to feel miserable, but you do your best to check in and do what you need to do every day, and just understand that, you know, the brain is a very resilient thing, and it'll get you out of, in most cases, whatever slump or how unhappy you are or fear or stress that you might have. And those bad times are going to come back, and we're just going to go through it again. And some people might say that's not a great way to live, but I mean, you got to play the hand you're dealt. Highs and lows, man. You got to ride them out.
Totally.
I don't know. How do you feel about that? What would your answer be to your own question?
Yeah. I mean, you know, our brand's called Mad Happy. So, I mean, I think the essence of what Mad Happy is trying to be an optimist, even in the time that you do feel low, you know, because everyone feels low all the time. Some people more than others. And I think for me, that's what it's about also. I think naturally I am an optimist, but I think, like you said, there's times where you're just like, fuck, is this thing going to work out? Whether it's professional or personal or just life. And so I would say something similar. And then I think I've learned a lot now. I think what would have caused me a lot of like suffering or just like pain in the past, whether it's just like relational or with work or with problems that come up, I handle them a lot better now. So I think just like the ability and the perspective of many years add so much to your ability to like handle more.
100%, brother. I actually think I underestimate, or at least underestimate, I think a lot of people do as well. It's like your stress management, although there might be times where you might not react to something as well as you have liked, it's kind of like a muscle that you build. You sharpen the blade. The more load management that you have to deal with, the mind is just as strong-willed as the body. And it'll figure itself out in more cases than not. I mean, Joe's probably over here calling bullshit because I literally complain to him all day. But I'm pretty manic when it comes to things that are stressing me out. But that's, again, even if I know that this, I'm going to be, it's just so much misery. I'm like, listen, just go to bed. We're going to wake up. We're going to try it again tomorrow. Because, you know, if you're lucky enough, you got a lot of days ahead of you. So it's really hard to keep yourself trapped when you know we're going to find the happy time soon.
Totally. All right. Three final questions we ask everyone. One is just any quick practices that you do, whether it's like working out, going on walks, talking to Haley, that like you feel like has impacted you very positively on the mental health side?
Yeah. So I need to do more of that. My Haley is, she's the definition of fitness. I mean, she takes a handful of vitamins every day. She goes to a workout class every single day. She's been trying to get me into it. I worked out when I was in my early 20s. And my brother was 6'2", I'm 5'9". He was built, I wasn't. And I would just lift the weights to impress women or try to have some more self-confidence in the attempt to talk to them. But, you know, I left that in Chicago. And so I need to do more of that.
Yeah.
So for me personally, what I do is really those conversations with Haley. Yeah. It's almost like a mental gym. The fact that I know she's listening, and with every word I speak, it's just lightening the load and taking that weight off my shoulders. So I think that's really important thing that people underestimate. You know, it's not healthy to be trapped up inside with your thoughts all day by yourself. And I went to a therapist when I was younger because my parents forced me to when my mom was sick and going through all this because I was having a hard time dealing with it. I hated it. You know, you said you're an optimist. I'm a pessimist. And I've been that way since I was a kid. I didn't realize it at the time, but I thought it was useless. But now more than ever, I think it's so important to really lighten that load and get your words out, because talking through your feelings, although it might sound silly, it might not help, or maybe you're not emotionally equipped to actually talk about those things, or you don't feel the desire to, I promise you, if you find somebody that's actually going to listen, even if that is a therapist, I think they're a fantastic guy. I wish I would have done it sooner. I think talking is just like number one recipe for success.
Love that. Agreed. One person that you would recommend come on the show, share their story, and someone that you've learned from, whether you know them or not.
Honestly, I would say Blake Robbins if he hasn't been on it already.
Love that.
I mean, that kid's just the definition of making it happen, you know? I mean, how do you grow up in the suburbs of Michigan and become one of the most sought-after venture minds in all of gaming and digital more broadly? The guy just has used the internet in ways that 99.9% of the people in this world haven't. I mean, the guy just knows how to use the world that he has at his fingertips around him to build a life for him and his family, so I think Blake's a really smart guy. He's got a really deep voice. He doesn't look anything like he sounds, but he would be a great conversation. Just talk about business, man.
Love that. And finally, Matt, what makes you mad happy?
What makes me mad happy? I'm going to say Haley and 100 Thieves, man.
Love that.
You know, it's just
keep it simple.
The two of the best worlds and one of the most stressful. Haley doesn't stress me out too much, but mad happy in every sense of the word, 100 Thieves and Haley Hay, soon to be Haig.
Awesome. Love that. When's the wedding?
July 21st.
Congrats.
Yeah, we're excited, man. I wasn't excited for a wedding until I went to my best friend's this past weekend in Charleston. I told Haley at dinner.
Literally like 4 days ago?
Yeah. Yeah, bro, no bullshit. She's been playing his wedding. You ever seen The Wedding Singer with Adam Sandler? Yeah, yeah. Brother, I told her this a million times. I realized I loved Adam Sandler in this movie. Everybody loves The Wedding Singer.
Yeah.
But I realized I'm the bad guy. I'm Glenn. I just want to play with my stereo and I don't care about the wedding. So, because I'm not a planner. Haley's the opposite. She's so organized. She's so thoughtful. She loves people. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm not good at starting up conversations. Like, I'm only good chopping it up with somebody if I know them for a decent amount of time, because I just feel so awkward. But my point being, seeing Rich, my best friend who got married, and Haley's best friend, they both got married. We introduced them.
Wow.
But I knew so many people at the wedding. It was the first time I've ever experienced, like, oh, this is just like our closest friends here, and we're all going to celebrate for like 4 days together. So I told, hey, I'm pretty excited for the wedding. So yeah, July 21st, man, we're pumped.
That's awesome. Well, thank you for joining us.
Can we get like a mad happy like wedding party gift? Haley asked for 100 thieves, but I think she would be way happier than that. No,
we have done some wedding stuff.
No
low
shit.
Key, low key.
I don't think I got the budget.
but thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
This was I'm sorry to cut you off. I just want to say, questions off the charts, man. This is one of my favorite podcasts I've ever filmed.
Thank you.
Incredible to hear about your story. You say you didn't talk about it often. I know you bring on guests, man, but your story is pretty incredible from all the small things. I want to hear more about it.
Thank you.
And I don't even listen to podcasts.
Thank you. Love that. Well, we're excited for this one to come out. So we appreciate you and signing off. Thanks, everyone.
Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you so much for listening to episode 101 of the Mad Happy Podcast. If you've been with us this long, you know we'll be back next week with another episode. We'll see you then.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.